I don't want the spotlight. I'm low key.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_bball. Yesterday, we looked at potential breakout players in the Eastern Conference, so naturally we're going to be looking at breakout players in the Western Conference today. Before I get into that, though, thanks to everyone who has sent in their Apple Podcast reviews. If you didn't hear yesterday's show, what I announced yesterday is I'm going to be running a league, analysts versus listeners, seven analysts, seven listeners, an eight-cat roto league. At the end of the year, we'll tally up who has the most roto points to see whether the analysts or the listeners win. There are going to be three spots available to listeners, and the way you can enter those three spots is by submitting a review on Apple Podcasts, sending me a screenshot of that and tweeting it at me. I'm still going to work out how we're going to assign the other four spots. There will be something for those of you who don't have any Apple products or iPhones on Android. We'll find those other spots won't be through Apple Podcast reviews, but the first three will be. So go submit your review and get a spot in that league. It'll be myself, Kyle McEwen, Greg Ehrenberg, Matt Smith, Seth Klein from Fantrax, and Alex Reclean and Adam King from RotoWire are going to be in the league as the analysts as well. So it's going to be pretty interesting, going to be exciting stuff to get involved in that league, and you know how to do it. But let's go into the Western Conference breakouts. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
What a lovely idea. Now, for those of you watching on YouTube, you can see the graphics there. There is obviously an error on these graphics where it says Eastern Conference instead of Western Conference, but if you're OCD, we'll let you get past that. The information is still going to be the same. Let's start with the Dallas Mavericks, and we'll go with Dennis Smith Jr., who was, I guess, somewhat of a disappointment last season, played a little bit under 30 minutes per game, and was the 142nd ranked player. Still averaged 15-4-5 with a steal, with 1.5 threes, but he really let himself down with both percentages. 39.5% from the field, 69% from the line.
Giggity!
And they were big, big discrepancies. But if you're in a head-to-head situation and you're punting at least field goal percentage, or if you're punting both percentages, as I know Kyle is want to do in leagues, it's a significant jump forward. Now, with Luka Doncic there, some people are concerned that Smith's value is going to drop because Doncic is going to have the ball in his hands. And that's true, but Doncic does know how to, he plays with point guards. He's not a guy that is dominating the ball and is going to have, you know, sky-high usage. Smith is still going to have a very high usage. He's still going to handle the ball. But what I think this does do is Smith is so much better in catch-and-shoot situations in terms of his efficiency rather than pull-up situations. And with a secondary ball handler out there, not Wes Matthews, not the pencil Harrison Barnes, Yogi Ferrell to a limited degree, but he's nowhere near as good or as respected as what Doncic is going to be. I think it opens up Smith more opportunities to be able to take more catch-and-shoot jumpers, and I think we should see his percentages rise. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that true shooting percentage, you know, jump up 4, 5, 6 true shooting percentage points. It was at 47 last year. If he got to 53 or 54, I wouldn't be shocked. And that's probably enough to drive him up the rankings 40 or 50 spots. He's going to score. I think he's going to play more minutes this year as well. He only saw that 29.7. I think that goes up to over 30. He'll score more, maybe more assists, but more importantly, that efficiency is going to take a jump forward, and hopefully that free throw percentage can come up 5 or 6 percentage points as well, which would really help him out, or help us out, when talking about his overall value. Because again, he was a little bit disappointing last year, but it's more to do with those percentages, which did really kill his overall value, unfortunately. The next guy we look at is the Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray of the Denver Nuggets, heading into his third season. A lot of these breakout guys are guys in their, you know, in their second season, especially, or some in their third season. I talked about Murray the other day in the third year player podcast that we did last week. He was excellent last year, the 59th ranked player, but remember, he only played 31.7 minutes during the season. Over the last 2 months of the year, he was a top 40 player, playing 35 minutes a night, averaging 17.5, 4, and 4.3. Now, yes, Isaiah Thomas is around, and Michael Malone is is prone to make whatever the incorrect decision is pretty much at all times. So that is, I guess, somewhat of a concern for Murray. I don't expect him to be playing 35, 36, 37 minutes as he was when the Nuggets were pushing for that playoff spot, but I do think he plays more than the 31 minutes that he saw last season, and he's able to at least bump his efficiency up, as many players do, and we saw him do that over the second half of last season as well. He's not going to be a high assist guy. I wouldn't even be expecting him to hit 5 assists as a starting point guard, of course, with Nikola Jokic there handing out those assists and Isaiah Thomas coming off the bench. I don't expect Thomas is going to be taking minutes away from Murray necessarily. Murray is the future of this team. He's the present of this team as well. And I think a top 50 finish is definitely an expectation for Murray, with the probability that he goes even higher than that. Maybe he becomes a 20-point per game scorer. Maybe that's going a little bit too high, but that's a possibility for him as well. There is a small downside risk just in case Malone does what he loves doing, and that's, you know, screwing the guys who do deserve more playing time and more shots, meaning that, you know, Isaiah comes in and plays 33 minutes and unseats Murray as the starting point guard, which would be ridiculous, but it is in the realms of possibility for what Malone can do. So that is a risk factor there, I guess, when we're talking about the Blue Arrow, but I feel pretty good and pretty confident about his value for this upcoming season. He should be fairly solid there. The next guy we look at is from the Golden State Warriors. Could have gone here easily with Jordy Bell, but I'm going with Kevon Looney instead, who's got a real opportunity to begin the season as the starting center for this team. He's obviously not going to hold on to that starting center spot when DeMarcus Cousins returns, but when's that going to be? January, February, March, who knows? And when Cousins returns, A, he won't be playing 34 a night, and B, he won't be playing every single game. So you're going to get good value out of Looney to begin the season. Remember, over the final 14 games of last season, where he played in only 24 minutes per game, he was a top 75 player, Kevon Looney. 8-5, but it was 1.4 steals, 1.9 blocks, and 57% from the field that really did get his value up. Now, that 1.9 blocks is probably a little bit excessive. He's most likely not going to put in that sort of a level. But it was only 2.9 per 36, and overall for the season he was at 2.2 per 36. So it was an elevation on what he'd done previously, but it wasn't totally egregious that he was like, oh, completely out of nowhere. It was still high, no doubt about that. I think that Looney can establish himself. He does have to battle Bell, so there is something we do have to pay attention to there as to which one of those guys gets the starting nod. I think it will be Looney, even though Bell will still be getting his fair chunk of minutes. And I think you could realistically expect Looney to play 25 to 26 minutes a night in the beginning of the season, maybe even more, at least until Cousins comes back, and then that eases off to 20-odd minutes per night. So I think he can take that step forward. He can improve on his free throw shooting, which he has over his two seasons. He's gone from 62 to 60. Actually, that's not true, because he went down to 55 last year. But more importantly, when he got that extended role, he was up at 64% post All-Star breaks. I think he can keep going in his free throw percentage in that direction. Efficient, gets steals as a big man as well, which is really key. It's one of the reasons Andre Drummond is always so highly ranked. He's getting over a steal per game, and Looney can do all of those. And now the opportunity is finally here for him to have an extended run at extended playing time. Next, we look at the Houston Rockets. I put Jim Ennis here because the news came out today. Carmelo Anthony was signed by the Houston Rockets, but the news coming from Adrian Wojnarowski is that Melo is intending to, or is going to be, Mike D'Antoni is going to play him off the bench. That means as the starting role, unless they're going to go back to Ryan Anderson, which I highly doubt it, it's going to be PJ Tucker and it's going to be James Ennis in that starting role. Now, Ennis is a very, very low usage player. But his ability to be a Trevor Ariza type, a guy that can come in, score maybe 10 points, hit two threes, and he has had some moments of real strong three-point efficiency at times in the past. Maybe he can nab you 1.2 steals. He can hit the free throws at a pretty solid rate. It's unlikely he breaks out into a top 80 player, but if he becomes 75% of Trevor Ariza, I think that's a possibility, and that would be something to watch. It's more for 14-team leagues, maybe 16-team leagues rather than 12s, but I'd be bloody watching really closely the Houston preseason games and how it looks at the opening couple of games of the regular season to see, A, how he's used and what his production's like there. Because if he's playing 32 a night, and he's getting you 1.5 steals and hitting 2.2 threes and doing it efficiently, then that's really, really useful. And that is something we have to pay attention to. And there's not many other options really on Houston that I could consider as breakout options, given, you know, Chris Paul, Jim Harden, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella. We sort of know who they are at this point. I do expect Melo to have somewhat of a bounce back season this year as well. Maybe he can get that efficiency going. Maybe he's able to maintain his usage in that bench role as well. But I'm putting Jim Ennis there as my breakout player for the Houston Rockets. For the LA Clippers, I'm going with the table Montrezl Harrell. Yes, the Polish hammer Marcin Gortat is there and is likely going to be the starting center. But A, Gortat is pretty old. B, he played like 25 minutes per game last season when the backup was Jan Mahinmi. So it depends on a couple of things. Does Doc Rivers view Gortat the same way that Scotty Brooks does? That we don't know about. But if he does, it's going to leave ample opportunities for Harrell to play behind Gortat. Yes, Boban Marjanovic is still there, but we all know that Harrell is clearly ahead of Boban in the pecking order. And the table only needs 22, 23 minutes to be a top 120 guy. He is a high efficiency guy, really high field goal percentage. The blocks aren't great. He's not a good rim protector. He's got short arms. He's an okay rebounder, but it's really solid point scoring, really high field goal percentage with okay rebounds and blocks chucked in there. And if he somehow gets to 27 a night, then he's an easy top 100 guy. Now, I don't think they're going to elevate him to the starting role ahead of Gortat, but I think there's going to be reasonable arguments made this season that he is a better player than Gortat, even though Marcin does a lot of things that don't necessarily show up on the box score, like setting screens and like being a solid pick and roll guy. But he's a declining defender, not a great rebounder, not a great shot blocker, and Harrell provides that lot of energy. But one of those guys like Jordan Bell, who doesn't need big minutes to be able to put up significant numbers. He's just signed that new contract with the Clippers, so he is coming in now. They're secure in his future. They believe in him, and I wouldn't be stunned to see him at some point this season take over the starting role from the Polish Hammer. The next guy we look at is on the LA Lakers, and it is Josh the Hitman Hart, the Summer League MVP, who was really, really strong last season when KCP was out, and then when Ingram and Lonzo were out, and Kuzma was out, he was putting up some pretty strong numbers. Now, of course, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has returned, Rajon Rondo is there, Lance Stevenson is there, but I think that Hart probably is the best player out of all of those guys. Maybe you could make that argument with KCP. In fact, you probably should make that argument that KCP is better, but it doesn't mean that Hart can't take that step forward and become the starting shooting guard on this team. He's a high rebounding point shooting guard. He gets steals. He's high efficiency. He shoots well. His scoring is pretty good. And he can be a top 100-ish type of a guy, maybe, if they give him a 32-minute role. A lot of it's going to come down to how Luke Walton views it. I wouldn't be banking on it happening. I wouldn't be drafting him anywhere near the top 100, but he's a nice late round sort of a pick in the hopes that they do go that direction and start him. I don't think they'll start the season that way. I think he gets plenty of minutes, 26 to 28 minutes a night, regardless of where he plays. But he does have that opportunity to take that step forward and really impact himself onto this lineup and make it impossible for Walton to not play him. So I'm really excited to see what Hart can do. He showed flashes last season. It is still pretty crowded there. Yeah, Lonzo, KCP, Kuzma, Hart, Rondo, Stevenson, all of these guys, even Svi Mykhailiuk, who obviously is underneath Hart in terms of the depth chart at the moment, but just another name in there. But there is an opportunity, and he is the guy, I believe, that does have probably the highest ceiling out of most of those guys, not including Lonzo Ball or Kuzma, obviously out of the Rondo, Stevenson, KCP type of a situation to be considered. The next guy we look at on the Memphis Grizzlies is Wayne Seldon Jr. I don't know what the Grizzlies are doing at shooting guard yet. Is it going to be Dylan Brooks? Is it going to be Marshawn Brooks? Is it going to be Garrett Temple? Or is it going to be Wayne Seldon? Seldon has really, really dominated the last 2 years at Summer League. Had a quad tendon injury, which limited him last season. Had a few moments, but he was inconsistent. I don't know if they're going to start him. I think they probably will start Dylan Brooks. But there is an option here for Seldon. Oh man, you can even throw Andy Harrison into that mix as well. There is an option here for Seldon, who over the last 11 games of last season, played only 22 minutes, but was a top 150 guy. 13 points, 2 threes, 2 assists, 0.6 steals, and shot 48% from the field. A little bit elevated with that shooting. but still had a true shooting of 55 for the season, which is marginally below average. Can bang in threes, can handle the ball a little bit as well. I think we might see him be able to at least get 1 to 1.1 steals. More of a 16 or 14 team deep league guy, but I'm interested to see what he can do if he is fully healthy, which we assume he is at this point, and there's no setbacks. But it is just a real mess in terms of who's going to play those minutes at shooting guard with the two Brookses, Temple and Seldon, with Kyle Anderson locked in as the starting small forward on the Memphis Grizzlies. So a little bit up in the air there, but still some opportunity for these guys, someone like Seldo, to really to step up and take advantage of that. Next, we look at the Minnesota Timberwolves. Karl Anthony Towns, like, I think he is what he is. I think he can take a step forward, but not necessarily as a breakout. Jim Butler, Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
Andy Wiggins, Taj Gibson, none of these guys are breakout guys. The guy I look for here is Tyus Jones. Now, yes, they did bring back Derrick Rose, which pisses me off, but I think they're going to use him in the Jamal Crawford role as a shooting guard, a guy that shoots 24% from three. Derrick Rose is going to be in that shooting guard role, and we have heard Thibodeau talk and say that he wants to use more two-point guard lineups and play a little bit more of Jimmy Butler at the four, and if that's the case, that means that Tyus is going to have to take a step forward this season. Jones is one of those guys who gets assists, who gets steals, who hits threes, and does it all really efficiently as well. He's not going to be a high usage guy. In fact, he's going to be a very, very low usage guy. So the scoring is not going to be there, but you can get assists, steals, percentages, and some threes out of Tyus. And if he pushes to 22 or 23 minutes a night, that comes into the realm of top 150, top 170. Now, if I still think that Jones is a better option in the starting lineup than Teague, a low usage playmaker, guy to set up, guy to provide defense, whereas Teague is better off running a second unit, but Thibodeau is not going to do that. Teague did work pretty well with that lineup last year. I still think that Jones can work better, but of course, it's just not going to happen, so it really doesn't bear much thinking. But if Teague does go down, and he has battled knee injuries and ankle injuries in the past, will Thibodeau go with Rose? Yuck. Or will he go with Tyus there? I don't know, but I do think that there is going to be a time this season where Jones does have standard league value. He's heading into, I believe, his fourth season this year. Maybe he becomes trade bait at some point. If he was a starting point guard on a team, he would be a standard league player, and this is an opportunity for Tyus to take that step forward with Thibodeau making all the noises that he does want to play him together with another point guard. So let's see if that actually does come to fruition. That's not necessarily going to be the case, but it is, you know, being speculated by Thomas a little bit. The next team we look at is the New Orleans Pelicans, and we're going to Julius Randle here, who was really, really limited last season by the weird playing time situation, the benching under the guys or under the control of Luke Walton. We always knew that Randle wasn't going to be coming back to this team. He only ended up playing 27 minutes per game last season, but over the last 27 games, we saw that jump up. 32 minutes a night, a top 50 player, averaged almost 20-9. Now, he doesn't get blocks. 0.4 blocks in that time is shithouse. He doesn't really get steals, but he does get assists. And heading to a Pelicans team who doesn't have to deal with someone like Lonzo Ball, Randle could jump up back up to the 3.6 assists he had the year before Lonzo was in LA. They're going to be running Lord Alfred Payton at point guard. Who knows if he is they're committed to him as a starting point guard. So I think Randall's going to have an opportunity to bump those assist numbers back up. All the talk is that Nikola Mirotic is going to be starting next to Davis. I'm not so certain that's the case, but regardless, I think that these three guys are getting 30 minutes a night each. Davis, obviously, more than that. You look at, you can get, you know, 36 for Davis, 30 for Mirotic, 30 for Randle. You can easily do that. I know they signed Jahlil Okafor, but I don't think he's even getting through training camp necessarily. Emeka Okafor and Cheick Diallo. Elvin Gentry showed no interest in playing Diallo most of the time outside of a couple of minutes here and there. I think that Randle can take a step up, be a comfortable top 100 guy, and really push towards that top 50 number. I don't think he's necessarily going to do what he did in that post-All-Star period for the Lakers, but a 17-9 type of season with strong percentages and an increase in his assist numbers makes him a really valuable option and should be getting a much larger role than what he had last season. Defensively, still a concern, but I like the pairing with Davis where it can work, and you're never getting rim protection numbers, so I don't think we need to be too concerned about thinking about that too much with Julius. Let's look now at the Oklahoma City Thunder. I'm looking at Jeremy Grant here. There's a gaping hole where Carmelo Anthony used to sit. in this rotation, whether it's going to be Jeremy Grant, whether it's going to be Patrick Patterson. We don't know yet at this point who's going to take that role. Will they go weird and start Nerlens Noel? I think that's highly unlikely, but Grant is going to have an opportunity. They played him quite a bit at center last season and played him pretty much as a fifth starter a lot of the time, him replacing Carmelo Anthony down the stretch of games in the playoffs. Now, Grant's not a good shooter, no doubt about that, but he does take three, so you can get something there. He blocks shots, he's high field goal percentage, he can score a little bit, he can get you some rebounds. And it's going to be hard for him to crack the top 100 with Westbrook, George, and Steve-O Adams there getting most of that shine, and of course Dennis Schroeder taking up his chunk of usage. But Jezza, I think, has a chance to at least jump his minutes up. He played only 20 minutes per game last season. I think that increases pretty significantly. He could be a 10-point per game scorer. The efficiency is going to be really nice. He's not really going to have plays called for him, but that means he's going to be doing a lot of dunking, a lot of putbacks, a lot of high efficiency shots from Jeremy Grant. Add in the shot blocking. I think he'll play some backup center as well, even though there is Noel there too. So I am interested in Jeremy Grant in an expanded role this season for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Let's go on to the next team. We're looking at the Phoenix Suns. Could have been Joshy Jackson here, but I'm not actually certain that he's going to get minutes over McCall Bridges, or he's going to be putting up the numbers that he put up at post All-Star last season. I worry about how the Bridges-Jackson-Ariza trio is going to go. Brandon Knight, I don't think we could really call that a breakout. We've seen top 50 seasons from Brandon in the past. Not saying he's getting to there, but he's got an opportunity. But a guy who impressed down the stretch last year, his advanced numbers were absolutely off the charts, and that's Shaq Harrison. He did the same similar sort of thing in Summer League with all his PIPM and advanced numbers, you know, through the roof. This is a guy that put up, you know, really, really strong numbers in terms of his steal numbers. Played only 17 minutes per game last year, but got over a steal per game, which is 2.4 per 36, which is really strong. He got over 5 assists per 36, almost 6 rebounds per 36. The guy, he can't really shoot, 23% from 3, but still converted at 48% from the field, 74% from the free throw line. And if they decide to go with, you know, someone who can actually play some defense next to Devin Booker, it's going to be Harrison. It's not going to be Brandon Knight. So I could see him play 23 or 24 a night, especially early on. Aliakobo's not ready. Maybe Brandon Knight just can't get anything happening. And we've got the ball in Booker's hands more. But Harrison can rebound. He can get steals. He can knock in some shots. He can be decently efficient. And there is some value there, especially in a streaming type of situation in terms of getting those steals. Shaq Harrison showed enough. Look, he's not a great player. He's not a starter caliber guy long term, but I think he's got an opportunity this season on the Suns to plant some value into your team by getting those steals, high rebounds, almost like a Patrick Beverley type of player. That's the sort of guy I'd be considering, except a worse 3-point shooter considerably. He'd be a guy that I'd be looking at as just someone to keep an eye on, not necessarily someone to go and grab in most of your drafts. Breakout guy on the Portland Trailblazers, a little bit hard to come across. Yeah, Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum, we know what they are. Yusuf Nurkic, we're pretty set on what he is. Mo Harkless could have been that guy. I think he sees a much larger role this year and get you that triple one, but, you know, low usage. But, you know, does he fall out of favor with Terry Stotts like he did last season? That's the concern. Al-Farouq Aminu, we know about him.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
So I'm going with Zachy Collins, a second-year player. There's no Ed Davis on this team, so somebody needs to step up and be the backup center. Is it going to be Myers Leonard? Let's all, for everyone's sake, hope it isn't. Shout out to you, Myers. I think Zach Collins can step into that range. He can block shots. He can shoot threes. I think he can hit them. He's a pretty solid rebounder. The passing's a struggle. The efficiency might be an issue for Zach, but I think that the Blazers want him to be the starting center at some point in the next couple of years over Yusuf Nurkic. So if you see Nurkic push down to 25 or 26 and Zach getting 22 or 23 minutes and then playing a little bit together, if Aminu falters or Harkless is injured, I could see him taking a really big step forward. It wasn't like that Collins' season last year was awesome. It was far from awesome last season, but he showed flashes and came on pretty strong at the end of the year, just showing what he can do, you know, blocking some shots, getting some rebounds at a decent rate. And I think that he can take a big step forward. It's obviously a deeper league sort of scenario, but I am interested to see what Zach can do in a most likely larger role for this coming season. Let's look at the Sacramento Kings. I think this one's pretty obvious. De'Aaron Fox should be the starter all season, should see his minutes pumped up over 30, should see somewhat of a rise in his efficiency. Remember, again, I know I stress this all the time, but there are always new listeners to this podcast. De'Aaron Fox is not a good shooter. That doesn't make him a pass-first point guard. He's not Ricky Rubio dishing 10 assists per game. He's a guy that can't shoot, but also score first. But I think he can improve some of his efficiency. It wasn't terrible. He can get steals. He's not a high steals guy necessarily, but I think he's got a chance to lead this team in scoring. I think the minutes are going to go up, and I think that he should be a guy you're looking at towards the end of a draft. But there are deficiencies in his game. The low steal rate, the low threes, the low efficiency numbers. You know, if he doesn't even get near 55 true shooting, I wouldn't be stunned at all. So there are some downsides to what De'Aaron Fox can do, but many, many second-year guys can take 7-8 point leaps in true shooting percentage, and Fox could be one of those players. If he can get that steal rate commensurate with his energy level on defense, that would be a huge boon. That's like a 20-30 spot jump if he can go from 1.1 to 1.5 steals per game. That's a big, big jump, and that's a real possibility for Foxy. So I really do like him as a standard league pick late in drafts this season, with really Yogi Ferrell and Frankie Mason III being the only options behind him, and I don't think there's any challenge for minutes there from either of those guys. The next guy we look at is pretty straightforward as well. It's the San Antonio Spurs, and it's DeJounte Murray, who is going to have he's going to have every crack at being the starting point guard for a whole season. Really put up some strong numbers to end last year. He is not a high assist guy. In fact, he is a low assist guy, but one of the best, probably outside of Russell Westbrook, the best rebounding point guard in the NBA. He gets steals at a huge rate. He gets blocks. The scoring, the three-point shooting, it's not going to be great for him, but he was the 80th ranked player over the last 2 months of last season in just 27 minutes per game. That should go up, the ranking and the minutes. You get you steals. Maybe the passing can improve from him. I'm not really certain that the assists are necessarily going to flow, but rebounds, scoring, steals, blocks, field goal percentage for a guy that can't shoot is all right, and three-point percentage is not great, and he's not really taking any of those. In fact, last season, I believe he only hit 9 threes for the entirety of last season, 9 threes in his rookie season as well. So not going to contribute in that area. You have to not look at him with the standard archetype of a point guard who gets you, you know, threes, assists, and steals. They're the normal categories you look at in a point guard. He's not that guy. His rebounds, his steals, some blocks, and some okay scoring. So I think that he is the guy we're looking at as a breakout. That's pretty obvious. I think most people will be all over DeJounte Murray as a breakout guy for the San Antonio Spurs. The last team to look at is the Utah Jazz. A really tough one here for me to get a breakout guy. Is it the Don? He's already broken out. Is it Rudy Gobert? Same there. Ravishing Rick Rubio? Probably not. Jingle and Joe, well, I think him and Rubio are just going to be what they were. Derek Favors is not jumping forward. Jay Crowder is not taking a big step up. I think Dante Exum's the interesting one. Now, I don't think that he's going to be this great option, but they signed him to a pretty lucrative contract that's probably not in line with what his production's been. He looked really strong in the playoffs, and he should be the primary backup guard here, taking Royce O'Neal's role somewhat, taking Alec Burks' role somewhat, and being that guy behind the Don and behind Rubio as the third guard who might play 22, 23 minutes. Quinn Snyder showed no hesitation in limiting Rubio at times last season. So maybe if Exum really, now that he's fully healthy, heading into his fifth season, maybe he can take those strides that we've seen so many flashes of. And then he gets hurt and you go, oh man, 7 months later, let's see what happens. If that can actually materialize, could he take minutes off Rubio? Could it be a 25-25 minute split between those guys? Yeah, I might be stretching a bit. Maybe I'm pushing it. But it's not crazy. We saw the quick trigger on Rubio last season. I think Exum and Mitchell can work well together, you know, really well. Dante's got to be able to hit his shots, but I think they can work fantastically, you know, together. He's got that speed. He's got the burst. He's got the athleticism. I think it's interesting. I wouldn't be taking him in standard leagues. I'd be really watching it. I'm interested in him in dynasty formats, even though he's not the greatest of fantasy contributors. But I think a larger role is going to be coming Dante's way for this upcoming season. And it's going to be one of those things that I am really paying attention to see how it plays out, to see how Snyder uses Dante now that he is healthy after a really strong playoffs and saw him play a fairly significant role in those as the Jazz rolled through the Thunder and then took a couple of games off the Houston Rockets. So interesting to see how Exum works out for the Utah Jazz. Guys, that will do it for today's show. Go and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Tweet it at me, at redrock_beeble, to maybe get yourself in the Analyst versus Listeners League. Make sure you're checking out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network as well. Go and find our basketball, our NBA podcasts. Go and find our NFL podcasts, one for every team. Go and check out our burgeoning Major League Baseball range of shows. So I think we've got about 10 teams so far. And launching in a couple of weeks, Locked On College Sports. We're going to have podcasts covering the major colleges. I know we're going to have Oklahoma. I know there's going to be Kentucky. There's going to be an Oregon. There's going to be a BYU. There's going to be a USC. There's going to be an LSU. Covering football, covering basketball, and any other sports surrounding those colleges. So make sure you're checking those out. We're going to have a full launch of that in a couple of weeks' time. And I know those of you who really enjoy your college sports, a great way to keep an eye on some of the prospects coming through for the draft as well. You can go check out the Locked On Podcast Network, College Network, which is going to be starting up in a couple of weeks' time. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Melvin Frazier.